Fasten your seatbelts and turn up your radio. We're going on a road trip.
Here comes the sun. Here comes the sun. I say it's all right.
June, the Portage County community of Custer is transformed into a festive and informative gathering place where thousands come to learn about sustainable living solutions. The annual Energy Fair is a decades-long tradition, but this year the event is canceled due to the COVID-19 pandemic. I'm Shereen Seward. Welcome to Route 51, where each year we preview the Energy Fair and its hundreds of workshops, demonstrations, and activities. Well, the Energy Fair won't be happening this summer. Today, we welcome two guests to talk about sustainability with information on the latest in alternative energy, sustainable agriculture, and ways to reduce your carbon footprint at home. Joining us today is Jenny Riggenbach, the Executive Director of Central Rivers Farm Shed in Stevens Point. Jenny, thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks for having me.
You bet. Also joining us is Nick Hyla, the Executive Director of the Midwest Renewable Energy Association. Nick, welcome to Route 51.
Very excited to be here. Thank you.
We're excited to have you. You can join the conversation, too, by calling 800-780-9742. You can email us as well, route51@wpr.org. Callers, please allow plenty of time for our producer to answer your call. And when emailing, be sure to include your first name and the community you live in. Jenny, for listeners who might not be familiar with Farm Shed, can you explain what it is and what's your role there?
Sure. So we're located right downtown in Stevens Point. Started around 2007 with really grassroots, kind of similar to the MREA. People really who just cared a lot about sustainable living and sustainable agriculture. Some of those folks included people like Nick, some farmers in the area who were just getting started, some folks from the university. And it's just really grown over the years. We currently have a network of 83 family and cooperatively owned farms who primarily sell directly to consumers, and another 30-plus restaurants, businesses, and organizations who are striving to source those source ingredients from those farms. And so our work primarily is focused around how do we connect more and more people to the folks that are growing food right in our community.
Okay, Nick, what is the Midwest Renewable Energy Association? For people who might not be familiar, what does that organization do?
Yeah, so we do a lot related to solar energy now. We started 30 years ago in response to the Iraq War. A group of families in central Wisconsin got together and discussions around what local actions can be taken to reduce our need for fossil fuels and our kind of constant global wars for oil. And they came up with this concept of local education and energy education and promotion of domestic renewable energy production. And so for 30 years, we've been on that mission. And what really has come out of it is a lot of technical training for this new clean energy workforce. We train over 1,000 individuals a year to design, install, operate, and maintain solar energy and solar energy plus storage systems. We also partner with jurisdictions all over the Midwest. We operate in 5 Midwest states, and we help them align their permitting and planning and zoning and local deployment goals to a national standard called SolSmart. And we also partner with jurisdictions and groups in what we call solar group buy programs, where we help consumers leverage their collective buying power and collective need for education to reduce the cost of solar energy and to get the highest value, lowest cost solar energy system for their home and business as possible. And so we're really advocates and trainers and facilitators of our transition to a local, clean and resilient, open and advantageous energy system.
Well, we hear a lot about sustainability. I mean, it's a popular buzzword, sustainability. But what does it mean really? I mean, when you think of sustainability, how do you explain that to people, Nick?
Yeah, I think, you know, in the context of today's, you know, highlighted social and economic justice issues, I think people can be attracted to the concept of sustainability through these kind of like broader and more motivating issues, whether that is, you know, pollution and polluted environments and the need to address those environments, whether it's climate change, which motivates a lot of people, whether it's domestic energy production. You know, there's these, you know, there's a lot of entryways into sustainability. But when you get there, when you've been convinced that, you know, you are convinced that our actions individually and collectively can be made in ways that reduce pollution, that increase local wealth, that increase like participation and democracy and help us sustain as a society. You know, we exist with limited resources and an ever-growing population and a lot of inequity, then the question becomes what can be done? And that tends to be a lot more boring. It tends to be a lot more difficult and introspective and limited. And so I think when I think of sustainability, I think of all the little things that we can do in our lives personally and professionally and socially to help reduce our impact, to help increase our local economic development impact, to help build bridges between between people to come to common solutions and to sustain really this great American experience that we have. And in general, you know, the way that sustainability is defined as a three-legged stool, where you know you have the social, you have the economic, and you have environmental. And I think that's a good framing for individual and collective action. Is how do our actions strengthen and ensure for our next generation, for our children and beyond, that they can enjoy you know, this beautiful world as much as we do.
Well, Jenny, from a food standpoint, then, that begs the question, what does a sustainable food system refer to really specifically?
Sure. Well, I think Nick really hit on it when he started to talk about, like, what can be done. Food is a really easy way for people to start living a sustainable life. And I think what we've seen with the COVID-19 pandemic and the major disruptions of our national food system, as a result of that, we've seen an increase, an overwhelming increase of people really interested in learning more about how to, really around their choices about buying directly from farms, how to grow food. I mean, we've seen a huge uptick in interest in gardening this year. And also then we're already getting questions about preserving and looking into next winter and and as people are, more and more people are buying into CSA's community-supported agriculture, we're just seeing this really great momentum growing around people really taking that step into sustainability through food.
Well, it's interesting you talk about gardening and more people growing their own food. When I went to look for seeds in May, it was impossible to find any. We ended up having to order them from far away instead of being able to buy them locally. So with so many more people growing their own food and making their own stuff at home, what kind of resources does Farm Shed have for people who maybe like me were new at it? Are there online resources or online workshops? What do you have to offer?
Yeah, so the biggest thing that we do each year, one of our biggest events, we have a greenhouse as part of our facility downtown Stevens Point. And there's a growing collective of community members who for years have been coming together, buying seeds together in like January, planning how they're going to grow, get their seeds started. They start that in March. And then some of those plants then go into their own gardens, and then they also host a large plant sale at Farm Shed, and those plants are just amazing. So we just finished that a couple weeks ago, and we had an incredible interest in those plants, and now we're seeing and we're growing online resources and connecting so that people can continue to sustain how they're going to learn and do that together throughout the growing season. We are offering more, working to offer more online Zoom types of classes. We typically have done that in person, and as all of us, we're working to continue to adapt how we reach everyone during this period.
So I want to get into some specific things that we can do that we can do at home. Perhaps, Nick, you talked about all the little things that we can do to make a difference. But one thing that really strikes me is, Nick, you talked about the long history of Midwest Renewable Energy Association, how this started decades ago. It feels like it's taken a long time for our society to really adapt to alternative energy, to electric vehicles and other options in the industry. What are your thoughts? Why has it taken so long for us to make these changes?
Change is hard in kind of the fundamental systems that have really underpinned our economic growth. You know, if you think about the way that electricity is generated and delivered, it's still today in much of the United States, it's really the same for the last 100 years. Wisconsin actually was an early innovator in electricity and electricity regulation. We had the first operating multi-customer generation facility in Appleton in the country. And we were the first state to establish a state regulatory body to regulate electricity, because, you know, electricity is a natural monopoly. And it's not, if you don't like your utility, you don't really have many options. It's all there's infrastructure that connects your house. You can unplug, but you don't have choice. So we're actually, most of us are not electricity customers, because customers have choice. We're ratepayers. And this natural monopoly that was the utility, and that is the utility and has been for the last 100 years, you know, the business model over the last 20 years has really been changing. Because if you think about the Industrial Revolution, the context of the Industrial Revolution was the more electricity that you can deliver to a factory that has these newfangled AC induction motors and AC electricity, you know, that revolutionized the industry, the more electricity you can deliver, the greater productivity you can have. And so our utility business model of investors get a protected rate of return by these state-appointed regulators. They get a protected rate of return, and the more they build, the more money they make, the more investment return they make. It's a very stable investment. That's been the same for a long time. Now, what ends up happening is that we are much more efficient per unit of energy because of energy efficiency, because of customer conservation, and because of the democratization of the energy system by which I can, on my home or business, install a solar energy system or a energy storage system and energy efficiency to reduce the business expenses I have related to electricity. It fundamentally changes the utility business model. Now, I would ask you, you know, what do you think this large network of established and wealthy investors that is used to getting a constant and protected rate of return for building things thinks about the idea of not building things anymore? They don't, not something they enjoy particularly. And so it is a real economic situation by which, you know, we need innovation and we need new business models for this to succeed and for us to have this transition and this widespread adoption of renewable energy. And that's what we've been experiencing across the country for this last 10 years, is what does the new energy economy look like, and how can we, as a state and through our leadership, state and national leadership, how can we define a pathway by which we can leverage our collective capacities, private investment, public investment, and transition our utilities to a situation where there's opportunity to really develop clean domestic energy.
Okay, thank you for your thoughts on that. We do need to take a break. Jenny, we're having a little trouble with your connection, so we'll be calling you back during the break, so hang tight and expect a call back from us. You are listening to Jenny Riggenbach and Nick Hyla, our guests today on Route 51, a discussion on sustainable living ideas. When we return, we'll talk about some specific steps you can take to reduce your energy use and what it takes to live off the grid. You can join the conversation too by calling us at 800-780-9742 or email questions and comments to Route51@WPR.org. I'm Shereen Seward. This is Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio. We're back on Route 51. I'm Shereen Seward. Nick Hyla and Jenny Riggenbach are with us today discussing sustainable living solutions and what sustainability means when it comes to food, too. We'll take your questions as well. The number to call is 800-780-9742. When calling, please allow enough time for our producer to answer your call. You can email us as well, route51@wpr.org. I will say this, the coronavirus pandemic has really brought with it this kind of surge of interest in self-reliance. We talked a little bit earlier about how more people are growing their own food. The Energy Fair was founded by people who really wanted to get off the grid and be self-sufficient. So, Nick, how practical is it to live off the grid, and how can that be accomplished in north central Wisconsin with our harsh winters and short summers?
Yeah, that's a really great question. You know, I think that, you know, there's a lot of idealism about self-reliance and, you know, getting off the grid. And it's all, you know, that is all possible with sacrifice, right? We have an unrealistic, most of us have an unrealistic vision of the amount of electricity that we depend on, you know, and, you know, it's as funny as it is to think about self-reliance in the context of COVID, you know, what you're really seeing is kind of what they call the Green New Deal. You know, all the digitalization of everything and the constant electricity use that powers it all, that's very difficult to do. And it's very, very difficult to use as much energy as we need on an individual basis. And it's not that it's to say that it can't be applied well in certain situations and that the technologies don't exist, but it does require a lot of self-sacrifice and investment. It's not, you know, achievable by everyone. The real solution is to look at the grid and to say, how can we strategically and collectively invest in the grid so that we have this ability to be resilient on the community level with local energy generation, community-based energy storage, what they call demand response and energy management technologies that help homes and businesses stabilize the grid and benefit from participation. You know, there's a lot of this more collective action that's needed along self-reliance. And I would probably say, and I don't mean to put words into Jenny's mouth, but the same is very true with the food system. You know, there's a lot you can do at your house to provide for your family, to cook and to grow, but it's very difficult to separate yourself from these systems and the participation in the system. And improving the system and making it more sustainable is really the answer to sustainability.
Jenny, what are your thoughts on that? From a food standpoint, how do we achieve that?
Sure. Well, I always appreciate it when Nick wants to put words in my mouth. It's always helpful. Thanks for that, Nick. You know, I think Nick raises a really good point. And so, you know, when we talk about where we're putting investment in our communities with our dollar, our hard-earned dollar, looking at local farms is a really important one. You know, I think it's been really challenging in Wisconsin to see so many farm bankruptcies that we've kind of neglected to see that even in the midst of the downturn of the agriculture industry, that there has been an uptick of farms that are growing sustainably and selling directly to consumers. Fairshare Wisconsin just put out some information recently about, you know, just to kind of give you a sense, like the average gross farm income in Wisconsin is about $175,000. Of that, the average ratio of the income for farms is about 20% of that. But when you look at these smaller farms that do more of the mixed vegetable operations, selling directly to consumers, that income is more at the 35%. So it's just an indication of if we really start, investing our dollars in really educating ourselves on the kinds of farms that are important to our local economy, Wisconsin will see a resurgence of agriculture. It's just going to look different. So that's one way in which people can really start educating themselves about the food system. And it's fun. It's just fun. It's fun to get to know local farms, get to know their animals and their farms themselves. We just have such a rich agriculture history, and it's enjoyable for consumers as well as the people that are growing the food that we eat.
We have a caller. Chris from Adams has a question about mowing lawns. Quickly, Chris, what is your question? Thanks for being here.
Mowing lawns, grass lawns are an ecological desert. They don't do anything for the environment, and they don't soak up carbon and put it in the soil. I dug up my whole front yard, and I planted it in flowers for the pollinators, and it's just a joy to come out here and sit and watch the butterflies, the bees, and the hummingbirds. But if everybody did this, because they suck up a lot of gasoline, and it's a pain to mow them, and my front yard takes like a little bit of energy in the spring to pull the quack grass out of it, and then I just get to enjoy it. And I wish everybody would just consider doing this, because you also get to meet your neighbors because they walk
right,
by and they compliment.
Exactly.
You get some back rubs and hugs for what you've been doing, and they stand and talk to you. So I just wish everybody would just consider doing this. If you put in perennials, for the most part, once it gets established, it's not really a lot of work, and you don't have to mow it all the time.
Okay, yeah. Nick, what are your thoughts on the best ways for sustainable action in our yards and in our mowing?
Yeah, I love that. I love that immediate action. It is, you know, the yard, the American yard, is a bit of a microcosm of our problem, in that what ends up happening in a typical, I shouldn't even say typical, hopefully we're beyond this, but let's just say conventional lawn management, is you eliminate the plant like a clover that would fix nitrogen in the yard, because clover, you know, if you ever watch clover grow, when there's a lightning storm, it takes the nitrogen from the air with its nodules and fixes it into the yard, which benefits the grasses, which can't fix nitrogen. And so the first thing is people use a broadleaf herbicide to get rid of the clover, and then take inputs, nitrogen, potassium, phosphorus, and put them on the yard, which people don't generally do, right, so that they run into the groundwater and they create problems in our waterways. And then they take pesticides and put them in the yards to get rid of the bugs. And then they mow them with gasoline lawnmowers and then bag up all the yard waste and have the city take it away, which all that yard waste is just more organic matter for the yard. And so, in general, there are really two approaches. One is, you know, you do what the vast majority of European countries and many people in America do, is you put clover in your yard and mixed grasses and fescues and make it more diverse than just a single Kentucky bluegrass. And now I have an electric lawnmower and a solar system. So I have a push reel lawnmower too, so you can push lawnmower. Or you can create a beautiful, diverse landscape that, you know, supports pollinators and diversity and garden and all of this stuff. And I think that microcosm, you know, of the lawn, it's really good analogy for what Jenny was talking about, which is how do we get out, how do we use our money and our ability to start supporting these more diverse, recycling, sustainable, local farms that represent that brighter idea, that more ecological idea, that more sustainable idea, that not only benefits the farmer because of lack of pesticide use and exposure to chemicals and more income on the farm, but it benefits us because we're eating better food, and it benefits the local economy because we're spending our money locally.
Speaking of money, we have an email from a listener. Krista in Wausau is asking, if you know about any incentive programs for residential homeowners to access help with the cost of installing a solar roof system. Are there any programs available for residents in the Wausau area that you know of, Nick?
Wow, that's, you're going to let me promote one of our programs right away. That's great. But I think I'll start with I think I'll start with promoting the state of Wisconsin's program, which is called Focus on Energy. And Focus on Energy is what's known as a public benefits program, in that when you have investor-owned utility, so your electric utility is owned by investors whose goal is to make money, and you have three appointed regulators that are supposed to regulate that a monopoly utility and a public good, that investor-owned utility wants to sell as much electricity as possible because that's how they make money. And so what we do in Wisconsin is we take 1.8 cents of every dollar that everybody spends on electricity, and we put it into a fund called the Public Benefits Fund that incentivizes energy efficiency and local solar energy development as a form of competition in an otherwise monopolized system. So if you invest in LED light bulbs and you get a rebate from Focus on Energy to do that, then as utility prices rise, your return on investment rises. So you're protecting yourself from the utility's interests in raising your electricity prices. So the first is Focus on Energy. Just Google Wisconsin Focus on Energy for residential customers. You can see a whole suite of great incentives we have in Wisconsin, the most cost-effective energy efficiency program in the country. For every $1 that we take, that 1.8 cents, right, of every dollar, for every dollar of that money that we spend on efficiency, it saves us as ratepayers $5 by avoiding costly investments in generation and transmission that we would have to pay for as ratepayers, right? Because when a utility builds a coal plant, they don't get a bank to finance it. They get future ratepayers to finance it. So if we can be more efficient with our energy use, then we can save ourselves money in the future. For Wausau in specific, we were just about to launch a group buy program called Solar Central Wisconsin that really focuses on Wausau. The city of Wausau is a partner of ours. They participated on the selection committee. We go and competitively bid an installer, and the rep from the city of Wausau is on our committee. We just picked the installer yesterday, and the program's going to start within a few weeks. So if you're interested in learning about it, we provide free education, discounts for the more people. We negotiate a low price and discounts for the more that people buy. And so look for Solar Central Wisconsin. You'll see it come out pretty soon.
All right. Thank you for that. We talked about earlier about that there are so many little things that we can do to increase our sustainability and help reduce our footprint. Jenny, from a food standpoint, what does that mean? What are some little things that we can do to embrace this?
I think the number one thing it's easy to do right now is that put a mask on and go down to your farmer's market and purchase directly from people who are growing food in your communities. We have farmer's markets all over the state, and that's a really great, easy way to connect. Many of them across the state are doing online. If folks aren't feeling comfortable about being in person, there's a lot of online purchasing going on with lots of farms throughout the state. There's also some really interesting, there's a really interesting Facebook group that launched with COVID by a woman named Rayanne, Farm Direct Wisconsin. They have almost 50,000 people that are in this group it's really all about just kind of sharing and learning where people can buy directly from farms. We also have the Farm Fresh Atlas. So you can visit farmfreshatlas.org or farmshed.org to link to that. But that's another statewide network that has been around for about 10 years that is really a great, great place to learn about what's available at different points of the year and who is growing and selling it throughout the state. Those are just some easy ways that people can start to educate them about the choices that they have that are, you know, starting to move away from conventional grocery shopping and purchasing.
Okay, Nick, I've got to say, when I walk around my neighborhood, curb appeal has never been better. People, I feel like people are doing more to improve their homes. I have talked to so many people who said that because they were at home for so many months, they wound up spending more time and resources on home improvement projects. So what are some sustainable home improvement projects that we could consider right now?
Yeah, maybe I'll start. That's a great point. You know, by day 10, we're all like, what if we got to fix this dump up, you know?
Right.
So we're all doing it, which is a real great opportunity for everybody to make their home more sustainable and more energy efficient. And so it really starts with efficiency. One of the things that we've probably noticed is that there's this secretive and invisible thing that's invaded all of our homes that weighs on us, and we're not quite sure what it is, but I'll tell you what it is. It's called phantom loads. And phantom loads are all of the different little lights that are on in all of the electronic equipment that you and all of your children constantly leave on all the time.
Oh, sure.
I mean, happen,
like,
right?
Yeah, the cable box, for example, right?
Yes. Your Alexa device, your computer, your Nintendo Switch, your radio, your tablet, all of the things, your cell phone. And so the first thing is really to buy power strips. Just plug everything in to something that you can just switch off. And when it's time to switch off, you just switch it all off. And you just kill all the phantom loads in your house that are constantly draining electricity. The second, I think, is energy efficiency. You know, focus on energy again. That program has incentives for that. And really thinking about home weatherization and comfort in the wintertime and the summertime. You know, people in Wisconsin maybe don't realize how much energy and how much comfort can come from good energy, a good insulation and weather sealing. And once you do those steps where you can look at your appliances and get more modern energy efficient appliances, deal with your phantom loads, think about conservation, do weatherization, then the obvious step is a solar electric system. That's an investment that will pay for itself very quickly and operate for 30 years. And what we're seeing now, interestingly, is that, you know, as people are home, there's a marked interest in solar energy. And most people think of solar energy as an investment. And when you look at kind of the stock market and the investment climate and the future and the uncertainty and, you know, the federal intervention that's really keeping the stock market where it is, lots of people are saying, maybe I should diversify my investments and invest in a solar energy system on my house that produces an 11% internal rate of return, gives me energy security, reduces my expenses over the long term, and it's pretty much a sure thing as compared to whatever the future of your mutual fund might be.
Well, I've got to say, we had an energy audit at our house a few years ago and added a bunch of insulation and just did some really small things, changed out some light bulbs. We ended up reducing our energy cost by about 50% a month. It was really shocking.
Great.
I mean, and it was so easy. So, you know, Jenny, I really wanted to touch on a little bit the farm to table thing. We hear a lot about farm to table. Is there a lot of interest in the farm to table movement?
There really has been an increased interest. I would say when I talk about our Farm Fresh Atlas and our network of over 80 farms and that additional 30 farm or restaurants and businesses and organizations, it is really those restaurants and businesses are really looking to capitalize on the farm to table movement and keep those dollars as local as we can. So we've got a number of great restaurants, and you know, COVID has created a lot of challenges for them as well, and they've worked to really pivot their business models so that they can continue to employ people and continue to be a connecting point between farms and their customers. And we're just seeing even more and more people really interested in supporting those businesses as well as the farms in the area.
You're listening to Nikaila and Jenny Riggenbach, our guests today on Route 51, as we talk about what sustainability means and its role in our lives. When we return, we'll hear more practical tips for incorporating sustainable living solutions in our homes and in our daily routines. You can join the conversation, too, by calling 800-780-9742. You can email questions as well, route51@wpr.org. I'm Shereen Seward. This is Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio.
Oh, if I was a farmer growing crops,
I'd work all day and I'd pray a lot. I'd work Monday through Sunday through the break of dawn. Sell my food at the market till my food's all gone. There's a place in heaven that people don't know. A place for the farmers and the seeds they sow.
We're back on Route 51. I'm Shereen Seewert. Jenny Riggenbach from FarmShed and Nick Hyla from the Midwest Renewable Energy Association are with us today in a mini energy fair of sorts discussing sustainable living in north central Wisconsin. Happy to take your questions too. The number to call is 800-780-9742. Callers, be sure to allow enough time for our producer to answer your call. Or you can email us, route51@wpr.org. I know had the energy fair happened this year, of course, that is canceled due to the COVID pandemic, but there would have been a lot of focus on clean transportation. Volkswagen got a lot of PR just last month. The company announced a new affordable line of electric cars. Nick, is this a future? Are electric cars going to be less of a novelty and more mainstream moving forward?
Absolutely. I think If you really drill down into why electric, there are a few really compelling points. One is, an electric vehicle has nearly 100 times fewer parts in its drivetrain than a gas vehicle. They're just very simple machines. They are incredibly responsive to drive, and they're incredibly convenient. If we have the high-speed charging infrastructure, the convenience that we have right now is the ability to charge at home. And this is one area where electric utilities are really keenly interested in increasing the deployment of electric vehicles because, if you understand how many utilities work, is that they have much more significant demand on the utility system during the day than they do at night. And if people charge their electric vehicles at night, that actually helps with the grid performance because you're evening out the load distribution on the grid. And so there's many utilities have programs to incentivize home electric vehicle chargers. It's four times cheaper to charge your car at home per mile and drive than even the cheapest gas that's on the market right now. The challenge is the challenge with most of this stuff is the cost of entry. And that's twofold with electric vehicles. One is just the cost of an electric vehicle compared to, say, an efficient car, a gas car. But the second is this other cost, which is until we have invested in a network of charging that makes sense compared to the convenience of gas, then the consumer will be, their interest will be reduced. And that's what you see with Tesla. But Tesla, one of the keys to Tesla's success, not only isn't the great engineering and marketing of the car and performance, but it's also been their investment in a nationwide charging network and prioritizing Tesla customers for charging so that anybody can go on a road trip and get charged. And so we're really excited about electric vehicles. I think the thing that I would say in this broader context of sustainability is, if your utility powers your electricity with coal, which in Wisconsin we're over half coal still, then, you're switching from a fossil fuel, gas vehicle to a coal powered vehicle. But even in that transition saves, on average, if you look at all the utilities across the United States, some of them really good, some of them are bad, 30% reduces 30% CO2 emissions without any change in the utility system. And there is a widespread change happening in the utility system with the vast majority of investments planned by utilities being solar and wind. And so it really is this electrification, this move towards electric. Not only is there going to be an incredible benefit for the consumer, no tailpipe emissions, no gas stations, charging at home, more responsive, simpler vehicle, no oil changes, you can go on and on, but it's going to be better for our grid also.
As we talk about transportation, it makes me think about all the miles that our food has to travel before it gets on our table. Jenny, we hear a lot about reducing food miles. What does that mean?
So I would, reducing food miles is really about, I think it's been really highlighted by seeing the breakdown of the due to COVID of our supply chain, and seeing all that milk dumped or all those potatoes rotting, and there's been so many articles about that, and it just shows that there's challenges, and it's fragile, the food delivery system, when we think about the large scale system. When we can reduce that and make it more, again, back from like a direct consumer to farm relationship, or some grocery stores are even doing more local. Our co-op in Stevens Point has a whole local section to it that's just continued to grow. That reduces the opportunity for waste within the system, and the freshness that you get when you're able to buy something that has been picked or sourced more quickly than if it has to get into the larger food distribution system. And there's lots of ways people can do that. It's more than just fresh vegetables that we've been talking about, right? Growing them or buying them at the market. It's thinking about how you might move from buying your eggs at a conventional grocery store to buying eggs that are coming from a sustainable farm. The price point is going to be higher, but it's also going to be, there's going to be a freshness quality. And it's one of those like easy steps you can take in moving yourself into more of a sustainable lifestyle. Meat is another one, thinking about where your meat comes from. And there's so much reduction in all the contaminations that we also have seen as a result of COVID, when you know directly who you're buying your meat from, and you can put a face to the name of the company that you're buying from.
I guess, Jenny, if we want to support a sustainable food system, does it mean we need to forego convenience? Is it always a lot of work, or is it an easy thing to do?
You know, I like to think about it more of your choices, and it isn't hard. I used to think it was really hard. I used to also think it was all or nothing. But honestly, I started for my family with eggs. We committed to buying our eggs locally, and then from there, we're now buying our meat locally. And I feel much safer about what I'm feeding my kids. And it's changed our diets into being more sustainable. We eat more vegetables as a result of being more thoughtful about where we purchase our meat and where we purchase our eggs. You know, we preserve more, and all of those things have added up to an incredible quality of life for my family, and one of the reasons why I was so drawn to FarmShed. And that's the kind of culture and community that we're here to support. And we have people who walk in our door every day and call us every day looking for tips, looking for ways that they can take those first steps. And yeah, it's about the choices that we have, and helping people understand that this is a great choice to have, to be able to purchase and support the people that are that make our communities whole.
We've certainly seen a groundswell of support for local farms, local growers, local restaurants, especially since the pandemic hit. You know, there's been a focus on wanting to keep things local. But Nick, you were talking about things from a regulatory standpoint earlier in the program when I asked you about attitudes and why it had taken so long for people to accept alternative energy. Do you think that, from a personal standpoint, attitudes about clean energy have also changed? Have they also evolved from personal standpoints?
Of course, yeah. I mean, if you look at surveys that are out there, notably, there's the whole series by the Pew Charitable Trust, you'll notice. Well, maybe we'll just go back and say, you know, we had the 50th anniversary of Earth Day this year, and Gaylord Nelson, a Wisconsin senator, started that with a sit-in 50 years ago. He had no idea at the time that, you know, his goal actually was to clean up the dirtiest environments. You know, he saw the economic and, you know, to be frank, racial injustice of the pollution that was in the country, and he wanted it fixed. And you know that the Clean Air Act was unanimous, bipartisan, Clean Water Act, all of the things that came out of that were a unanimously bipartisan approval based on, you know, the thinking at the time. And there's a lot more unanimity and opinion than you would believe. And if you look at the Pew Charitable Trust polls, for example, of young Republicans, you'll see that the future is one in which we see a myriad benefits of breaking with the old system. And all of the waste and all of the politics and all of the shame that is embedded in this old energy system, and moving to one that creates local jobs, that supports with property taxes local school systems, that reduces expenses for businesses, that makes us more competitive, that makes our grid more resilient, that reduces pollution, that is a real vision for the future, a vision for investment, something that we can all be part of. That is happening, and it's happening and these undercurrents, and, you know, we're distracted by all these other issues, and politics has become, you know, a lot about these kind of like gut social divisive issues. But if you look under that, the water is much calmer, and the renewables will very soon be on the very right side of history.
Jenny, what do you see as some of the economic benefits of the local movement? We just talked about some of the benefits of this as a whole, but from a food standpoint, what do you see?
Well, I think what Nick is talking about, the people have also an opportunity to see that same kind of systems and regulatory shift in our food systems. And I think that's starting to bubble up because of everything we're living through right now. But when I talked earlier about where that farm income lived and where the growth in farms is really happening in Wisconsin, as many are experiencing a huge disruption as well, I don't want to discount that. But when we think about and we focus our energy around those that are growing and contributing to our economy, they're not being subsidized in ways that conventional agriculture is. And those are places where consumers can also start to educate themselves in the same way as consumers have been educating themselves in a much longer period around sustainable energy that Nick talked about.
Nick, I wanted to give you an opportunity to talk about some of the stuff that is going on at your organization. And I know that the Midwest Renewable Energy Association is working on this solar in schools initiative. I thought that was interesting. Well, how is that working out? And is it still happening, given everything that's happening right now?
It's amazing. It's still happening. That program is really inspirational. There's a business entrepreneur and businessman in the Madison area. He had a business that got solar. He got so frustrated by dealing with the utility and just being kind of near retirement age. He sold his business and started a foundation called the Couliard Solar Foundation that is really focused on making solar, like making Wisconsin a global leader in solar energy development. And so he's worked with us to fund solar module donations, so the panels that go on the building to schools, and for us to provide assistance to schools and technical colleges to help them go solar. And it's been very, very popular. We're seeing a ton of activity this year, and we're only in the second year of the program. And it mostly is because of the expense reduction. You know, schools use an incredible amount of energy, and with our program and the cost savings to the school, it really is a no-brainer for schools as they look to reduce expenses. And so many schools are doing it, and we're pretty excited about it. I think, you know, we see the transition to clean energy as an educational movement. You know, it can't happen without educating younger folks and educating the community about the practicality and the reality and the benefits of it. So, yeah, thanks for asking about that. We're super excited about that program and about how it all came together.
Jenny, I was looking at FarmShed's website, and there is really a focus on some community partnerships to help folks who are struggling to find food and to feed their families. How is that working?
You know, it's been really, really incredible. I would say positive things about the COVID outbreak is it's reminded us of how much we care about each other and how much we really want to help and make sure that people have food and people have shelter. And our goal at FarmShed is to ensure that more and more people can enjoy the benefits and the health benefits of local food. So we have partnered. We're partnering this summer with CAP Services Hmong Uplift Program that has started a prepared meal service for elders in the Hmong community. And so we're working on sourcing some ingredients for them from market vendors and local farms. The mobile pantry of Portage County is another one we're working with to get more fresh vegetables into those pantry boxes that are being distributed into the rural parts of our community where people don't have transportation. And then also our Salvation Army Hope Center, which is our only homeless shelter in Stevens Point, where we're starting to work with them more. We've had a long-term relationship, but wanting to source more ingredients into their meals. And then our next step is to figure out how we get more folks that are now benefiting from these new types of services into helping to create those meals and create opportunities, those Great. Economic opportunities, those job opportunities around food in our community.
Great. We'll put links to both of your organizations on our website as well. That is all we have time for today on Route 51. I'm Shereen Seward. Thanks again to our guests, Jenny Riggenbach from FarmShed and Nick Hyla from the Midwest Renewable Energy Association. Our executive producer is Rick Ryer. Rick is also our on-air producer. Today's show was produced by Joey Ratch-Kramer. Special music today from the Beatles, Katrina and the Waves, The Mighty Pines, and The Fifth Dimension. Thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. You can hear the archive of today's program and links at WPR.org/Route51. Next week, we'll talk about the trends and economics of the local craft spirits industry in a special encore presentation. Until then, we're heading out of town.